Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Connection is a healthy and essential aspect of our daily lives. From a warm hug after a hard day to kind words just when we need them, these gentle moments give us an understanding of life's true meaning. But when the ability to connect is interrupted by the hustle of daily life and to-do lists pile up next to the worry of who needs school supplies, sometimes making decisions about our health and the well-being of our loved ones can take a back seat. When it comes to those we care for, vaccines are one of the greatest public health success stories, and along with other measures, are one way to help prevent certain diseases. At Merck, we envision communities where families, healthcare providers, local organizations, and advocates work together. Health equity happens when every person, regardless of age and ethnicity, in every community, has fair access to healthcare, including the vaccines they need. For more information, please visit whyvaccines.com.
What's up, Open Floor Globe? I'm your host, Michael the Pod Pina, and I'm joined on the other line by my good friends, Sports Illustrated legends Rohan Nadkarni and Chris Herring. Guys, we made it. The 2021-22 season is over. I am physically, emotionally, mentally expired as a human being, going off maybe 3 hours of sleep after attending last night's Game 6 in Boston, waking up way too soon to catch a train back to Brooklyn. And if you'll oblige me for a minute, I just want to say off the top that with another year in the books, this season was a truly wild ride. Thanks to you both for co-hosting this show with me. You've made it super fun each and every week. Everyone, myself, our listeners, the universe gets smarter when you guys talk, so bless you both. Thanks to the Open Floor Globe, especially all the heroes out there who routinely send in questions that make the show what it is, you are all so wonderful and appreciated. On that note, now that I've stalled long enough, it's time we get into today's episode, which will be 60 minutes of granular analysis about the Christian Wood trade. Rohan, let's start with you. Will the Mavs regret including Boban Marjanovic in the deal? You don't have to answer that question. I'm obviously kidding.
Well, let me just say, Mike, just echoing your thoughts, always bittersweet when the season ends. You know, I think we're all excited to take a little break. I might sound like Jeff Van Gundy during Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals because I, like him, clearly have COVID, but at least I'm willing to admit it. not the way I wanted to end the NBA season, certainly. So huge shout out to you and Chris, especially, who had to do some extra work this week to pick up for me as I was literally shivering under a blanket while also sweating a lot. It's a very interesting sensation. What a great season it was. Honestly, a very entertaining finals. I know maybe less so for you, Mike. But it's always bittersweet when the season ends. Don't you guys think ESPN should just be like, we're paying the TNT crew whatever it takes to like do the last game of the NBA finals? Like, who doesn't win in that scenario?
the people who work at ESPN don't win. great question, Rohan. I'm really happy, again, just echoing what I said earlier, that you're here, that you're feeling better. That's wonderful. Guys, the Warriors are champions. So on today's show, we'll obviously be breaking down the finals. We'll be opening up the mailbag and so much more. But first, a quick reminder to please keep your emails coming. Openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. Okay, Rohan, Chris, I know I sent more specific questions in the outline to both of you, but let's just start with you, Rohan. Just give me your reaction to watching Game 6. Did it go how you thought it would? Just what stood out once it ended?
Well, I was impressed that the Celtics, even after a barrage of Steph threes and craziness in the third quarter, I mean, they still made it a single-digit game in the fourth quarter. I thought it was a microcosm of the playoffs they've had in which, you know, they've gone down. I mean, this was a team down 3-2 going to Milwaukee, beat Giannis back-to-back times, you know, withstood that, won a game seven on the road against the Heat. Just a really resilient team in the postseason. But, I mean, those turnovers, man, it's hard to watch. It's genuinely hard to watch them literally kind of throw away their season like that. In that regard, I mean, I do think the game went the way I thought it would. I thought Steph would play great. He was, and I honestly, with the pressure of the moment, didn't have a lot of faith that the Celtics could kind of keep their turnover issues at bay. And kind of, unfortunately for them, that's how it played out. That's not the way you want to go out in the finals, is just throwing the ball to the other team. But unfortunately, it's been their issue all postseason long. It finally caught up with them.
Chris, your thoughts?
Yeah, I picked Boston to win yesterday in Game 6. I thought that they'd show a little bit better. I figured that when, for the better part of the last 48 hours before that, every critique from anyone who's ever existed in the media was turn the ball over, less damn it. That maybe that would sink in. And I imagine that Ime Udoka and the other coaches from the staff probably said something similar over those 48 hours. I figured that would be so emphasized that would be kind of a priority. But, you know, let's be honest, too. It's not just the Celtics deciding whether or not they're going to turn the ball over. It's the Warriors influencing that. It's them speeding them up. And it's the defense playing really well. If you want to throw in the exhaustion aspect of it as well, there were aspects of yesterday that felt like, as resilient as this team is, just moments where it's like you just kind of saw the air coming out of the balloon, where when they turned it over, you saw the Celtics stop running back in transition. That run at the end of the first quarter into the second quarter was like nothing I've ever seen. For good reason, because it was literally historic as far as how big a run that was in the last 50 years of the finals. So when you saw that, you kind of figured it was over. As Rohan pointed out, they did make a little bit of a charge at the end of the game, but they weren't able to get enough stops in those moments. You know, it felt like Al Horford hit three or four threes in a row that would drop the lead to 13, and then the Warriors would come back and hit another one that would make it 16. So,
Al Horford was the Jon Snow sword meme in the second half, just trying to...
I don't watch enough TV to know what that even means.
Don't admit that on...
Harry, I watch a lot of TV, but
Harry,
I don't watch...
Harry, you ever seen Game of Thrones, brother?
Doug,
I didn't watch.
Saying?
I didn't watch Game of Thrones, and it sounded like for the last season I was better off for not having done it. So I watch a lot of TV. I don't watch Game
Harry,
of Thrones.
Harry, you've seen The Affair, but you've never seen Game of Thrones?
Yup. And I'm proud of it, too. And I'm proud of it. I'm proud of it. I use my spare time watching basketball. I don't know what you do. Aside from watching The Affair. But Horford, yeah. I mean, Horford kept hitting threes, and you kind of felt like it was weird because I was also in that space, and I tweeted this, like trying to figure out whether I should start my story that I was going to have to write overnight. And I'm like, are the Celtics going to do this or not? Because it would be nice to know whether I need to get a head start on writing this piece. So it was a little bit annoying from that standpoint. But you did get the impression in the first half, when they had their highest turnover half of the playoffs, this probably isn't going to end well for this team, even if they mount a little bit of a comeback. That was the case. It was even as someone with no dog in the fight, not caring who won, it was frustrating to watch because it kind of... That was where the series became less competitive. Boston couldn't afford to turn the ball over and still have a chance in the
series.
It
also felt like every time Horford hit a three, It was like the most random three the Warriors would come back and hit. Like the next, it was like Otto Porter,
Draymond,
like Wiggins. Like Draymond was like, what? Yeah, it was Draymond's like Steph jumper. Coming back. Oh my God, Draymond Green.
So yeah, the turnovers. I actually have an email here real quick that I just want to read. It comes from Dylan, who writes, a lot of people in the media are criticizing the Celtics for their turnovers, but really the Warriors should be credited for causing so many turnovers. It's their on and off ball D that created the situations that the Celtics were in. And Chris, that's basically what you said in your explanation. And I agree. I want to like give a lot of credit. There were some sloppy live ball turnovers, absolutely. But like,
I mean, they played good defenses. Yeah.
The Warriors won this series on the defensive end, clearly. That was something that Ime Udoka said after every single loss. It was something that Draymond Green said after game six. Their defensive rating in the series was better than the Boston Celtics' defensive rating in the regular season, which was obviously the best defensive rating in the league. And in this game six, real quick before we just move on from it, 22 turnovers for the Celtics. 80 shots. The Warriors took 92 shots. Like, you're just not going to beat the Golden State Warriors. I don't care what, like, where it is, who's playing. As long as Steph Curry and Klay Thompson are on the floor and Draymond Green, like, give them 12 extra offensive possessions where they can get the ball towards the basket, and you're probably going to lose. So the second chance opportunities, the offensive rebounds, just murdered them. And it's super frustrating for them, but you got to give credit to the Warriors. Like, they are, I mean, they're like the next chapter of dynasty basketball in the NBA, I think, officially, if you want to say it now or even before. 4 titles in 8 years, same core. Just like, hats off to them. It's amazing to watch. And if you're going to lose a championship, there's no shame in losing it to those guys.
I mean, there's some shame. I'm kidding.
No.
You hit the nail on the head. Like, it's a huge accomplishment to make it to the finals. And, I mean, we've only seen them beaten in the finals healthy once, right? I think there's a reason for that. They continue to have, I think... I want to save this take for later in the podcast because I know there's a question you had about it, Mike, but... Well, we're evaluating in real time just how valuable Stephen Curry is. And they were really good this season when he was healthy and when him and Draymond played together. I think that, you know, the only question we had about them headed into the playoffs was, can Steve Kerr figure out how to make the pieces fit? Because we hadn't seen Poole, who at the time was a major contributor. We hadn't seen Poole, Clay, Draymond, and Steph really play together at all during the regular season. It happened for a couple minutes. Against Boston, ironically. So that was really the only question mark, but they were... I hate to be the guy on the podcast who's like, people forget they were just dominating in the regular season right up there with Phoenix before the injuries hit.
Yeah, I mean, that strikes kind of the nail on the head for me because I feel like some of the stuff that people got really excited about when Golden State looked really great to start the playoffs, like, oh, wow, look at Jordan Poole, and, like, who's going to stop this offense? And then it was more of a question of, like, can Jordan Poole guard anybody at times during this series, like, prior to this series? So the lineup that everybody was so excited about, like, couldn't even always play together, and that wasn't really the lineup that took this Boston team out. It was a defensive effort that largely did that with enough of Steph to go around to really finish the job and to really put the Celtics away. So this was, you know, I know it's not a novel thought, but this was, to me, really the most... This one stands apart from the other three titles that the Warriors... This iteration of the Warriors has won, obviously, because it was not just some juggernaut team. It was a team that was really, really good. We all saw that. It was a team that was kind of uneven for large parts of the season because of how long Klay missed, how much time Draymond missed, how much time Steph missed, the fact that they were never really on the same page until essentially the playoffs. And even when the playoffs started, like, Steph was questionable, I think, going into even game one against the Nuggets, I want to say.
He came off the bench for the first 4 games of the playoffs, didn't he?
Yeah, so there was no way that this was a given. You know, like, we can talk about, you know, there have been the kind of dumb narratives this past week that some people have thrown out about, like, the checkbook wins and everything else. Like, there was nobody looking in this playoff run saying, like, for sure the Warriors are the team. Maybe they would have had closer to a win total that the Suns had they been healthy all year, but that just wasn't reality. And if we've learned anything over the last few years with all these injuries, you can't just kind of pencil anybody in and assume that they're going to get it done, particularly given how strange stuff has been in Warriors land for the last couple of years. So this was really, really impressive. The Celtics shot themselves in the foot repeatedly, despite how good the Warriors defense was, but the Warriors defense was really, really good, and they got enough of a secondary effort from Wiggins to put them over the top.
Yeah, before the game, I was talking to someone who works in the Celtics front office, and after that conversation, I was like, oh, the Celtics are not going to win this game tonight. He was basically like, we need a big game out of Peyton Pritchard.
Oh.
And we have to – it was kind of like a I'm not going to say like the attitude was that the series was over and they were defeated, but they – or at least this person's sense was that they could not score in the half court. Their offense had no answers, and we saw that in Game 6. Like, if they couldn't get offensive rebounds, they were in a lot of trouble. And instead they gave up 15 or whatever it was. So, yeah, just wanted to share that because I know Rohan's favorite player, Peyton Pritchard. I was just bummed
not to see him out on the floor. Speaking of favorite players, Mike, we talked about doing this. Can I just tell you some of the takes my parents have had throughout the series? Oh, my God. When I was like, so my dad after game one was like, why isn't Al Horford scoring more? And I'm like trying to explain to him that they're guarding him with the small. They're not getting all these kickout threes. He's like, no, he's just like, Horford's got to be more aggressive. So like, I texted my parents during the third quarter. I was like, Horford's stepping up, but the Warriors keep answering. And my mom just goes, serves him right. I don't know why. my dad was like, Robert Williams is my favorite player on the Celtics. Unassuming guy, just does his job quietly. My mom says, agreed, not annoying like White and Smart. And I'm like, what did Derek White ever do to anybody? Just absolute. My mom texted me the Warriors logo after they won game 5.
Saw that. Just legendary just stuff.
Absolute. They woke up early so they could have more time to hate on the Celtics after they knocked out the Heat. So
you love to see it. No, yeah. You love to see it. That's awesome. We got to have your parents on the pod.
Absolutely.
Like, it goes without saying. They can actually host it for a month if they
want. Yeah, I was going to say, during August, it's all them. I agree.
Guys, let's talk about Steph Curry, who is, I mean, got his finals MVP, two-time scoring champ, two-time regular season MVP, four-time champion. Andre Iguodala got up to the podium last night and just declared him the greatest point guard of all time. Chris, you and I, last week, we talked about, you know, ranking players based on, you know, guys that we've seen with our own two eyes, either in person or on television. Mm-hmm. And I think you had Steph fourth or fifth behind Duncan, LeBron, and MJ. I had him third behind Marcus Smart, and I can't remember Pritchard. The second player. Yeah, Pritchard. But let's actually now try to place him. I know this is tough.
No,
stuff,
I'm excited for this question.
It requires a lot of research. I know you are. So I want to just rank him historically among all of the players.
Oh, okay. I thought it was a different question. Okay, okay.
Which one? Oh, no, we're going to get to that.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. You're chomping at the bit.
I really am.
We're trying to go in order here. So I guess I'll throw it to you, Rohan, first. If I say Steph is top 10, are there 10 guys that you can name who are clearly better than him? Are you pushing back on that? Just where do you kind of, I guess, contextualize his greatness coming off of the performance that he just had in that finals?
I think that he absolutely has an argument for top 10. As you know, I also value much more greatly basketball that took place after 1980 than before it. My line of demarcation.
Sorry, Kareem. You're done.
I mean, Kareem did win a finals MVP after 1980, I believe. So, I think he's top 10. It is tough when you actually start to list out the names, which I've done, other people have done. I mean, I do think he has leapfrogged Durant, someone who I thought for a long time was going to finish in the top 10, and I think he still might. I think you got to say he's leapfrogged Shaquille O'Neal. Can you say that? I mean, Shaq, three finals MVPs, yes, was so dominant.
You can, but
I love Shaq. I could talk about Shaq for 2 hours straight. But I mean,
love Shaq too. But
has Steph had? Oh, this is gonna get me killed. I just don't know that we've seen anyone since Shaq have a finals as dominant as he has.
Right. Well, there are other basketball games that are played besides the finals, though.
Absolutely. But yeah, I think top 10 is comfortable. I think there's still arguments for guys like I'm saying, Shaq. I mean, where do you put? Do you put him above Kobe? I've seen some people put him above Kobe, which is always a delicate conversation. But I don't think you can say top 10 and be like scoffed out of the room. It's absolutely a conversation now.
And what's remarkable to me is that he, as he said during the finals, before they won, he has a lot left in the tank too.
Yeah,
and it's not like, it's kind of like the whenever people debate LeBron and MJ, it's like, can we just not do this until LeBron's career is over? I just want to see the whole thing, see the whole body of work. With Steph, it's like, okay, he's now getting compared to Magic Johnson in serious conversations, and when it's all said and done, maybe it won't even be a conversation. That's how impressive he is and still is. 43 points in basically a do-or-die game four on the road against the best defense in the league. He's 34 years old. I don't think he's slowing down at all. So it's just when we are trying to, you know, place him in some kind of historical ranking, it's very difficult just because he's going to probably climb it next year and ascend even further. He's just so amazing. But Chris, how do you kind of answer this question? Just how many guys would you put ahead of Curry right now?
I don't know exact order. But I, you know, and I wrote this basically as my lead for the column that I wrote about him last night. I think he's got to be top 10. I mean, you can split and splice and dice this different ways if you want to. I think you worded it. You've said like he's been like the fulcrum of the most beautiful offense the league has had for a while. And in the story that you wrote, Michael, there's no debating that. Part of the reason I think this title stands alone for him and for that organization is that, okay, any team can win, not any team, any really great team can win one title. You know, happenstance, confluence of weird events. They got that
Mavericks
title. They got that title to start, and that wasn't like a fluke by any means. Obviously, we've seen it wasn't a fluke, but they got that title. They then lose one that they should have had, which maybe you could say that there was a weird confluence of stuff causing that with the Draymond suspension, whatever else.
A lot of good stuff happened after they lost that one.
couple of good things. They get two more with Durant, which it's still crazy to believe that that blew up the way it did. The stuff with Draymond and Katie, you know, being unhappy seemingly most of that year, his Achilles, Clay, whatever else. So they lose that year after winning two with Durant. They have the, you know, depending on how you view it, a year or two from hell, mm-hmm. At least a year from hell, but also allows them the opportunity to be in the lottery to potentially play with those assets, to trade them in for something greater. They opt not to do that. they then win this year after getting Clay back late in the season. But as Howard has written, as we've all seen, as we talked about with the Wiggins stuff, there's no second surefire star night in, night out. So it requires more of Steph at an older age against a dominant, dominant defense. So regardless of what you thought about Steph before, this was the heaviest lift he's ever had. You can make your arguments about, you know, I pointed out last night on Twitter, the teams that Golden State had to get through, all of those teams have the arrow pretty much pointing upward. Denver mm-hmm. should be better, should be a lot better if they get guys back healthy, Jamal Murray, Michael Porter. Memphis played without Ja Morant for half the series. You didn't play against Phoenix. Who knows what Phoenix will be now going forward anyway. And in the Western Conference Finals, you got a Dallas team that could use some reinforcements, already is trying to reinforce with Christian Wood, and missed 98 million wide-open threes throughout a series and has a young Luka Doncic on the team. And a Boston team that immediately after the game, Ime Udoka saying, hopefully this is just the beginning for us. So these are all, you know, maybe they caught these teams at the right time, but I don't care. They won. They beat who was in front of them. Steph did this without having night in, night out support from any one dude from a scoring standpoint. It's wildly impressive. And to me, he had already won three titles and already been the most key player on those three teams that won. Easily could have been four titles, easily could have been five. But it's four now, and the reason that it's four now is because of Steph. So to me, it's very clear that he's a top 10 guy. I'm not sure where I've got him within that. I probably have him in front of Shaq for a few different reasons. Maybe in front of one other person on the list. I'm not sure which order. I'm not sure who I'd pull. But I think he has to be top 10. And I think very quickly we could be talking about how much higher in the top 10 he should be if he wins another one.
I would just like, just to your point, Chris, I just want to say, you could also argue that all the teams you mentioned caught the Warriors at the right time, because Klay Thompson was not Klay Thompson. Draymond Green was like trading great games for duds. They didn't have a second star. They didn't know what their rotation was until late in the second round of the playoffs. And then a key part of that rotation goes down. So, and that just, to your point, it all just goes back to Steph, because he makes the entire organization's life so much easier.
Agreed.
Yeah. As Steve Kerr said after the game, none of this happens without Steph Curry. I wrote a story in November about the resurgence of their offense. When they got off to that hot start, they were in Brooklyn, and they had, I think, the best offense in the NBA. After last season, they finished, I don't even know what this is, I think they finished like 21st in offensive rating. I could be making that number up, but I'm almost positive. Yeah. And they looked like they looked like the Warriors again. And it was like, I asked everybody in after the game that came to the podium or the interview room or whatever, and Kerr, Wiggins, Draymond, and Steph, I asked them, like, what's the key to this renaissance here? Like, what's going on? And, like, Wiggins just laughed and was like, Steph Curry? Like, is that a serious question? Like, everything is about Steph Curry. He's just amazing. And we didn't even, like, you can talk about the production, the threes, all of it. But, like, Kevon Looney made this fascinating point last night where he was talking about the influence that Steph has had in the game, where he's truly transcendent, truly revolutionary. And he was like, not only has Steph changed, like, offensive philosophy, but, like, the power forward position and the center position is forever changed defensively. Like, certain people can't play in the league because Steph came along and changed how offense goes. So,
I mean,
it's like...
There were years where if you wanted to be a serious title contender, it just came down to, do you have an answer for guarding Steph? And yeah, you're right. It just eliminated, like, Zach Randolph couldn't play. It was like, you're done. You can't play in the NBA anymore.
Yeah. I mean,
and that fundamentally has to factor into, like, whether a guy's in the top 10. He's changed the sport. And you could make that argument on some level about a lot of people and the way they space the floor as a four, the sort of mobility they play with, you know, a Kevin Garnett type, stuff like that. I understand that everybody, right, you have that argument you can make about everybody, but when it's a point guard that touches the ball, it's the conversation we've had about Jokic, for instance, about can he be as impactful as somebody like Steph, given that Steph is going to touch the ball literally every play, Whereas, you know, there are going to be some possessions where the ball might not touch Jokic's hands. It's going to have an impact on the defense. It's going to impact who you can play. It's going to impact who can play in the league in a way that, you know, maybe not everybody else does.
Also, I just want to throw this out there. This is not related to what he does on the court necessarily, but can you think of another superstar in the league of his caliber that would come off the bench for four playoff games? I honestly cannot think of a single one.
Not four. Not more than like one or two. No
way. And it just, he sets a tone. And it's like, I don't think Kerr can bench Draymond in game four of the finals if Steph Curry's not willing to come off the bench for four games. Like, it sounds corny, but like, it's true. Like, guys like that, they set the tone for the organization. Like, guys on the Warriors say it all the time. Like, if he's willing to sacrifice, if he's willing to be coached, like, who are we to turn that down, to say no? And it's like, it is kind of the great inefficiency among superstars. Guys who want to stay, guys like him, Giannis, Jokic to an extent, will it truly, that's showing that you're willing to do whatever it takes for your team.
And being low maintenance, being super humble, the comparison to Tim Duncan, Steve Kerr made it again last night. I think Tim Duncan's like maybe the only other superstar that I can think of who would be like, yeah, I'll come off the bench, whatever, like as long as we're winning. Like,
he'd probably prefer it. You know,
he's like, can I be an assistant coach now?
Yeah.
But yeah, to, you know, we could get into naming names. I think that's kind of boring, frankly, to just throw out names and be like, hey, is Steph better than Moses Malone? Like, who knows? Yeah. Who cares? Like, he's up there in being, he's in the NBA stratosphere all time. Influential players, and it's still happening. So shout out to him, incredible run. I don't even know how else to put it into words. Let's go into the next question that Rohan was very excited about. Rohan, you'll start here. We'll throw it to you first. I feel like you got something cooking. I asked you guys if we had to write the top 100 tomorrow for next season, where would Steph be on it? And we try to, for listeners who are unaware, we try to project forward how these players are going to rank in the season ahead. So Steph is obviously, he's got recency bias on his side for sure. 34 years old, just won the title, just won finals MVP. He's on top of the NBA once again. But like, you know, there's going to be a lot of things. We're going to get into this later in the show and different questions being asked, but the NBA landscape is constantly shifting. Guys are going to be healthy next year that weren't healthy this year, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Rohan, where would we rank Steph? Where would you rank Steph on the top 100?
So let me just start by saying, I think I had a little bit of an epiphany during the playoffs about how I personally am going to construct okay. my top 100 list.
Yeah.
Because we had some guys on the list, and I look at where they are, and I just think, I'm picking a random number. I don't know which player this is. I don't have the list committed to memory. But the guy who was 28 on our list, I look at it, I'm like, is that the 28th guy I'd most want in a playoff series? Because at the end of the day, what do I want? I want to win a championship, Mike. So I'm looking at this list. Who do I want? Who's the player I most want if I want to win a championship?
So this is fascinating. This is fascinating.
It
changes everything.
It does. It does. And you know what? I'm putting Steph Curry number one on my top 100 next year. let me just see it. It's done. It's done. Give me Steph.
Is this a serious
Steph.
Response?
Yes.
You mean it. Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
Herring is so mad because last year he was the
only person. No, I'm trying to figure out whether you're being completely serious.
Giannis at one.
I'm not mad. I was just trying to understand whether you've been serious.
I don't know. But if I could go a little bit further to explain why. To my point, I think I saw that they were 39-11 in the regular season when Steph and Dre played together. Obviously, a bunch of those games were without Clay. If Steph didn't get hurt, I think he was actually a little bit underrated this season.
I had him first team All-NBA. I think.
Yeah,
you did, yeah, and I remember seeing that, being like, "Wow!" But
he's incredible,
really great.
Yeah. So
his numbers were down, and he was still really, really great, and probably would have been first team if he had been able to stay healthy.
Let me put it this way: I think his biggest competition is probably KD and Giannis, and I mean, KD got swept by the same Celtics team. Giannis had a chance to close them out up 3-2 at home, couldn't. Steph did the inverse, closed them out on the road. We just spent this whole series talking about Draymond's been up and down. They had to bench Draymond for a fourth quarter. He doesn't have a second star. How much he's the engine. I just think, yeah, I think this guy, when he's good to go, is so hard to beat in the playoffs because you could put almost any four players around him and he'll find you enough offense to make it work. And if I'm basing it off that criteria, who's the guy I most want to win a championship next season? I think I'm taking Steph.
Okay. I mean, I have a lot of thoughts here. Got to unpack.
Me too.
when we do the top 100, I don't think that. I think that that's a totally separate conversation. Because there is, first of all, there are 82 games that are played, and they matter. They don't matter as much, and the basketball is different, but they do matter. Like, the 82 game regular season has an impact on what happens in the postseason. You can ask the Milwaukee Bucks in them playing Game 7 in Boston instead of in Milwaukee, just as a small example. But learning about yourself over 82 games as a basketball team, there's just a million things why that matters. And I think that the spirit of the top 100, if I'm not mistaken, is just to try to calcify who is the best player and rank them as such. So you're kind of twisting it a little bit. I respect
it. I'm definitely twisting it. I reported a story.
Oh, Chris is getting upset.
No, I'm it's like
you could see the disdain on your face, brother.
I promise you, it's not. If it was disdain, I would say it. It's like the inception of like the MVP conversation of like what's most valuable, and we're doing it with like another form of the same question. And I'm just like my head is spinning.
But well, let me just say this:
it's not disdain. I promise, it's not.
Let me say this: I'm not saying I necessarily have the right answer. I'm obviously bending it. I'm obviously bending it to my criteria. I'll add this to your point, Mike. It's a question that we'll have to have about the top 100, which I do not want to think any more about right now. I just want to think about getting a negative test and drinking a pina colada. But but I will say, I mean, I will report the story further. I think I only scratched the surface of it. NBA playoff basketball is a different sport than NBA regular season basketball. It really is. Coaches, players, everyone agrees on it. And yeah, I think it's a conversation we have to have if we want to bake that into the top 100 a little bit. And maybe we don't. Maybe we don't at all. And I would respect that decision. But that is to me plus recency bias why I'm making this decision today.
Yeah, that's probably part of it too.
There's
completely fine.
Little bit getting caught in the moment,
but let me say
this:
the Celtics were really good when fully healthy. I mean, they were running away with the league from January on, and obviously teams in the playoffs gave them a challenge. But I mean, for Golden State to do what they did defensively is remarkable.
Well, okay, yes, I agree with that, but I mean, is Steph Curry like spearheading the defense? Like, so?
Yeah, I know he. It's yeah.
I'm not trying to take anything away from Steph Curry, Chris.
Steph's a fraud. You're saying he's a one-way player,
basically. Yeah. yes. Chris, please. Unpack what Rohan had to say about top 100.
Yeah, I mean, I hear where he's coming from. I think all of us probably have that moment where we're like, okay, this was really damn impressive. We could all acknowledge that this team, this Golden State team, was flawed. And despite that, Steph just won title number 4. Probably the heaviest lift he's ever had to do, and he did it without needing 7 games to beat anybody. Without the top seed. Now, granted, they did have home court advantage in this round, but without the top seed. So this was really, really impressive on a level that I don't think I had any expectation. I picked them to lose the round before this one. I did have them in this round. So I get it. Like, I think most of us probably at least flirt with, like, how much higher should Steph be on our list than he was last year? Which, given that he was 4th on the list last year, you have to at least think about whether he might be number 1. That's fair. I understand. He's not there for me. I think that if you have someone that teams are trying to hunt defensively, it speaks to what those deficiencies might be, which that's fine. I mean, he's 6 foot two. Like, of course teams are going to try to hunt him. That's fine. Offensively, he's great. I will say that Giannis essentially had his way against this defense too. Jimmy Butler had his moments. Hell, Kevin Durant had, I think, a game in his series where he had a moment.
Had his way. I'll push back a little bit on that, but I hear what
you're saying. Okay. In terms of, like, for the critiques that were laid out there about who's had 40 in 10 games in the finals before, Giannis has done that. Giannis was dominant in the series against the Celtics in a sense where he did not have his second best ISO score.
Sure.
So, like, we can talk about how great the Celtics are. They were not playing against the best version of the Bucks, who very easily could have been on this stage. So, to me, that's still the guy. I've shouted that from the mountaintop since last summer.
Giannis is Robin.
On this podcast.
That's all I just heard.
Yeah. I mean, so I'll stay there. I'll stay there, like, for all the stuff that we're saying about Steph and who he didn't have. Giannis didn't either, and Giannis put up ridiculous numbers too and is responsible for doing more on defense. What I think is interesting, though, is like a couple months ago, and I want to say both of you guys had this mindset, but you can correct me if I'm wrong, the argument was that Jokic was the best player in the world.
I think the argument that he was the most valuable player during the NBA's most recent regular season.
Okay, fair. But what I'm saying is, like, I don't know if we're talking about offensive dominance and someone that is better on defense than they look or get credit for. That's kind of what Steph is doing, except, again, okay, Jokic doesn't have the ball as much as Steph does from possession to possession, but he's a bigger version of the same thing that's kind of twisting the game in a different sort of way and is better on defense than he gets credit for and doesn't get picked on probably as much as Steph does. So all I'm saying is, like, I kind of feel like it's more in that realm. I think Giannis is kind of on a different level and didn't really have a chance to completely show it this year because Middleton was out and around where they really needed him. And they still almost won the series. So I'll give it to Giannis. I'll probably say that Steph probably is closer to three for me. I'm not even sure who my number two guy is. I would entertain Durant. I would entertain Steph there, but I would probably somewhere.
That might have to be the title of the episode.
Yeah.
That's very spicy right now. And
it's spicy, but Giannis is my number one guy, and I'll figure out the, like, Jokic, Durant, Steph,
what
that ranking
receipts
rolls out as.
He said, correct me if I'm wrong. But you two, I
maybe
believe.
It must have been Michael then, because if it wasn't Rohan, then it had to have been Michael that said that he was. I thought he said best player in the world, but maybe he didn't say it. Maybe I'm just.
If I said that,
stuff.
I'm not. I don't think that's crazy. I'll stand behind
right.
that
and
opinion.
And that's the point, is none of these are crazy. Like, even when Rohan was like, oh, Chris is disdain. It's not disdain. Like, I think this is the time to at least be thinking about it. But I do think that to say that Steph is the number one guy, based on this, when the guy that I thought was number one didn't have his next best player and
can I
was
just say,
pretty good against
I
that
think
player,
we all agree the
too,
Celtics should have lost in the second round of the playoffs. I think we're on the
I
same page there.
Trash take. Trash
that,
garbage take.
I think that Mike Budenholzer sticking with Grayson Allen as a starter for an entire seven-game series.
I'm still frustrated about that. That's disdain.
That's disdain. Yeah, that is
just smoked. Grant Williams. We don't even need to get into it, but it's okay. I was going to say something about Steph. Oh, I was going to say a lot. There was a shifting narrative coming into these finals that I saw in a few places that was like, it's crazy, like, that there's no top five player in these finals, like, for the guaranteed top five player in these finals. Yeah,
what?
That was a thing. It was like a prevailing narrative about, like, the death of the super team and like super duper stars leading their teams to the championship. And
despite
I was
Boston,
like, Steph Curry,
Boston State media's best efforts to turn Tatum into a top five player, I can't believe that narrative. We're about to talk about Tatum,
but please lay off. I mean,
okay, I will.
But Steph, yeah, I think he has to be in the top five.
No question, top 100. Absolutely commendable, my brother.
If he's not, given that he was last year, right? Yeah. If he's not in our top five this year, we're going to get some angry emails.
Where did he? What all NBA team was fourth. He actually on?
I think he was fourth. I'm looking at our list now. We had KD 1, Giannis 2, LeBron 3. Steph was fourth in front of Jokic, who was 5.
LeBron's taking a little bit of a tumble. I hate to break it to him.
He's going to be really interesting.
So Steph will probably be 3 then, is my guess, and maybe Jokic 4.
I think LeBron's going to get a lot of motivation out of our list next year, unfortunately.
Yeah, we also have to... The tricky part, of course, is, you know, pitching it forward. So it's like you have a guy like Embiid.
When was the last time KD, LeBron...
Embiid was 8th last year on our list, by the way.
Oh, my God. Wasn't Harden in the top 10?
Who?
Harden.
Harden was ahead of Embiid. He was 7th.
That's disgusting. Oh, my God.
So I would venture to guess
he's
going to
be closer to 77 this year.
The Luka Doncic number.
Yeah. When was the last time KD, Kawhi, LeBron, and Steph were all healthy during the playoffs? That's what I want. That's what I need.
Good old days.
I know. I just need to see that.
Hopefully
Please.
The Nets can make the playoffs next year.
Yeah.
do you guys want to talk? I kind of don't want to talk about Jason Tatum, but I have it here on the outline. I guess just what was your impression of his performance in the finals, his entire postseason run? As I will say, credit to your guy, D. Wade. Really, the only parallel that I can see in recent NBA history for someone that young, 24 or under, being the best player on a team that gets to the finals, let alone winning the championship, it's like Tatum, Wade, LeBron in 07. That's like the whole list. I might be missing someone. I think that's like, that's it. It's pretty impressive stuff.
Yeah. So first of all, shout out to D. Wade. Don't get me started on the Heat. Ruined the first 7 years of his career. Absolutely botched it. They did. They flew too close to the sun. It's like the Lakers argument with LeBron, where it's like they won a title, but every other year has been a disaster. Like, yeah, I don't know that the Antoine Walker, James Posey, Jason Williams, veteran core of role players was the smartest move in hindsight. But I will actually mount a defense for Jason Tatum here, because I've seen people being like, that was an embarrassing series for him. I've seen the word unacceptable thrown around. First of all, the very best players in this game, from Magic Johnson to Shaq to LeBron to Kobe, you name them, players who have cemented their legend and had already cemented their legend more so than Tatum, have had worse, if not bad, finals. So it happens, okay? Acting like it doesn't happen is ridiculous. As you mentioned, he's really young. This team is so clearly ahead of schedule. They've been ahead of schedule during every single one of their playoff runs. The only reason they were in those Eastern Conference Finals all those years is because the East was kind of middling. And credit to them, they took advantage. This idea that, I mean, you look at the box score and it's like 22-7-7, I think 36% shooting. It's obviously not good. But when you watch his performance in the context of each game, show me the game where you're like, this guy's straight up playing awful. I mean, game one, he couldn't score. They won the game anyway because of his playmaking.
Game six, he was bad.
Game six was probably the only time I was like, he didn't step up. And to say, oh, that means he's the kind of player that can't step up, after the number of times during this postseason, whether, what was it, game five against Miami, game six against Milwaukee, which to me is still one of the most impressive games of any team or any player in the playoffs. He ran into a championship defense. He ran into a team that, it's like LeBron going up against the Spurs in 2007, a team that was, you know, people thought old at the time. Obviously, I don't think Tatum's quite as good as LeBron, but these things happen. It's a learning experience. Like, you have to lose in the finals sometimes. It's not always going to be sweet. So, to me, like, I'm encouraged after this playoff run. As someone who, it's no secret if you listen to this podcast, I'm a Heat fan. I'm not looking forward to playing Jason Tatum in a playoff series. And by the way, they beat, like, the consensus best teams in the East, okay? They beat the number one seed. They beat Giannis. They beat KD and the Nets, who had Kyrie. So, what more could he have done? He wasn't necessarily the best player in all those series, but he was more than just carrying his weight. So I have like no desire to listen to any like what's wrong with Tatum takes after this series.
Chris, I know you got to run a little bit early. Do you have anything you want to say about Tatum? How maybe he's going to be your number two? I know number two in the top 100 was waffling a little bit. Just what are your thoughts?
I don't think he's going to occupy that spot for me. Or for, you know, the aggregate when we got to compile our own notes. It was a uneven series for him. It was weird in the sense that he shot the ball fine from distance. He just could not get comfortable and really find a comfort zone from inside the arc. Going to the basket, I kind of felt like he and Brown both held on to the ball a beat too long, particularly when the defense was kind of ready and prepared for them at the rim. You know, I'm not someone that likes to really feed into the fatigue argument, but if anybody had a case for that, I think it was Tatum. And I think that it showed, you know, we talk so much about the Kobe parallels and, you know, his relationship with Kobe and his idolization of Kobe. And I couldn't help but think about this, it's gonna sound mean. Every time Tatum shot an air ball, which every game there was one or two of them at least, he just would come up short on these jumpers at the end of games, and it looked like he was exhausted.
Do you think he was yelling Kobe as he was putting up those air balls?
I hope not. God, I hope not. But, you know, I think it was Bomani Jones and Vince Goodwill had a segment that they did on Bomani's show about how Bomani was basically saying, like, man, I don't know anyone that doesn't respect Tatum's game. You watch him. He's got a beautiful game. It's very aesthetic to watch. He's got a clean jump shot. He creates good looks for himself. But there's something about him that sometimes, and maybe it was amplified in this series against Golden State, where it's like he almost is looking more for style points than he is like points, like just getting fouled sometimes. And he had a play like that last night where he threw up some really, really odd shot. Draymond put up a good contest for it, but it was like this weird layup that he kind of did like reverse under the rim. And it's just kind of like, just go up and get fouled or try to get fouled. But he makes it almost more difficult for himself. And, you know, and I think what will be interesting is, like, what does Tatum take from the series when he goes back and watches it? Does he watch it? Does he watch it with his coaches? Does he see where he could have been better? Because there are times where I kind of feel like he actually has it going jump shot-wise. And I understand the desire and the tendency to want to get to the basket. But I feel like his decision-making there sometimes in this series was not great, even though he was shooting the ball well. And it's like he almost has his defender beat, just like he could shoot and beat them that way, but decides he wants to take a jab step, give the defender a chance to kind of get back into the play, and then attacks them. And there's sometimes maybe I just don't understand what the thought process is there. He play made well enough, but he turned it over just too much. And I think at a certain point you had to be prepared for what Golden State was going to do to load up on you with the double teams they were throwing at him. He has to clean that up, but he'll be fine. Not, like Rohan was saying, guys rarely win the championship as lead guys before 26, 27 years old. It's no different for him. Wade was really unusual. A lot of these guys take that long. And, you know, I think he'll get one at some point. Who knows whether it'll be in the next 2-3 years, but he's fine. He'll be fine. He's just got to bounce back. Yeah.
2 years ago, Giannis won an MVP and went out in the second round. You know what I mean? In a bad loss. Like, it happens. I did see someone say Tatum shot 6 for 18, which adds up to 24, is one last tribute to Kobe. So you can't rule that out.
Yo. If I hear one more Kobe comparison on this pod, I'm banishing both of you for all of time. All of time. That's it. I've had it.
If you want to be Chris, on the podcast with Michael, send in your emails to openfloormail@gmail.com. Two openings. Come and get it. Because me and Rohan are going to make more jokes.
Yeah.
Chris, do you have to run? Are you sticking around? What's going on?
I've got time for one more thing.
Wow. Okay.
Oh, nice. There we go. He's just having so much fun. Have the three of us done a... Have we ran this combo
before? It's been a while since we've
done
a three-man pod.
Yeah.
It's been a minute. I just want to say about Tatum, got to get a little bit smarter. Golden State's defense was terrific, and he was pressed a little bit because they weren't getting anything from the bench in the last three games of the series. Clearly exhausted.
What happened to Derek White, man? Tough.
It was not his finest hour.
It was
for
not.
Sure. But all in all, like, when you're on that stage, you get more criticism, but where he's at in his career, like, should be the tip of the iceberg for him. And, a lot of the should, as Ime Udoka said, propel him forward to doing great things. And it's pretty crazy that he led, I know it's just total counting numbers, but he led the entire postseason in assists, which is something that if you told me that last year, and there's a 0% chance I would ever believe that Jason Tatum would lead a postseason in assists, let alone this quick in his career. And I know he played a ton of minutes, but that's just kind of remarkable to me. And I know he also set the record for most turnovers in one postseason as well. But okay, let's ask another question here.
The Tatum AD duo is going to be tough to stop for sure.
I literally don't understand why people think he's going to the Lakers. But, you know, this, you know, fairy tale lunatics can have at it. My words aren't even making sense. I don't care. That's what we're doing today. I want to predict who we think is going to actually go to next year's finals.
Ooh.
We did this last year after the Bucks beat the Suns. I can't remember. I want to say I picked the... I don't want to say because it's probably going to be who I pick again. coming out of the East, who do each of you guys have for next year?
Oh God,
I'll list mine then. I think it's Milwaukee. I think it's Milwaukee if they're healthy.
Surprise, surprise.
No, I mean I feel like this season. I mean, they won it last year. This season, I think there's a fair case to be made that they would have gotten it. They would have gotten to the finals again this year had they been healthy. So it's
Herring's
not
just
like
got
you said,
like
surprise, surprise.
Six cases of Miller Lite behind him. Like, it's not true. I'm sorry. Now the disdain. It's on my bad.
Oh jeez, Rohan, who do you have coming out of the East?
Ironically, as much as I want to say the Heat, who are going to obviously trade for Donovan Mitchell or Bradley Beal, I think I'm also going to go with the Milwaukee Bucks. I think they are going to learn from their mistakes that they got too cheap last offseason. They can't keep wasting time with Giannis. I think they're going to tweak the rotation. I think they find a way. I'm going to go with the Bucks.
Great pick. You're both wrong. I'm going with the Celtics. Star power is young. Rob Williams will hopefully be healthy. Only guy on the roster who's older than 28 is Al Horford. They're just going to put him on ice in the regular season and maybe make another trade or two. Who knows? But I think continuity will do them well. Internal growth will do them well. This experience will do them well. And they're very good. And their coach is also incredible. So I like the Celtics.
Can I ask you one thing before I run?
Sure.
I don't know if this was in the outline or not. Like, as we talk about the steps Tatum needs to make,
yes,
and the flaws within this series, like, do you think that they need someone that's just more of a natural table setter than maybe Smart or just to take the ball out of Tatum and Brown's hands a little bit given the turnover issue or just the sheer amount of pressure that they had? Like, it sounds crazy to ask, like, would Dennis Schroeder have been helpful in some ways throughout this playoff run to have just reduced the amount of pressure that those guys had on their shoulders?
No, I don't think that they need another ball handler. I think that Tatum, the growth that he made from December to now in that department suggests that he's just reading the game and reading coverages better and better and better. He made strides from
huge
the beginning of the postseason to last night, really. And I think Smart's fine. I think he's actually a lot better. I mean, he's the best passer on the team. I think you got to get a little bit of improvement out of the guys on your bench and some of your younger players. Hopefully Derek White has some more confidence. He's a pretty good ball handler as well. So I don't think that they need anything from the outside. And I think they have everything that they need to win the championship, as was seen throughout this run. I just think these guys will get better and get more comfortable with one another.
I'm stealing this from our friends at the GOAT podcast a little bit, but for the top 100 this year, what if instead of ranking players, we rank Tatum's turnovers from the playoffs?
Wow. On that note, definitely send your request to help co-host this podcast at openfloormail@gmail.com, because Michael is not going to let Rohan back on this bad boy ever.
Chris, before you go, can you give us who you think's coming out of the West, and then we'll just roast your answer.
I don't feel good about this one. I remember last year my pick was Utah. So take whatever I'm about to say with a grain of large salt.
Damn, that Muldone flaky salt.
Yeah. My pick was about as bad as those new Jazz jerseys.
Oh, those are horrendous.
So the middle two are so bad. I'd be lying if I said I even really have a good guess here. I'll go just to be a little bit off brand as far as like not everybody's pick. I'll go with Denver. I think they'll be interesting. Hopefully have their guys back healthy. It's a team that's made a run without having their roster fully healthy. Jokic will have some help. I'll go with that just because I think it's kind of lame to pick Golden State. And, you know, the Lakers, who knows what they're going to look like or what they're going to do. I don't think that would be my pick anyway. Phoenix, we've got questions about who they're going to come back with. Who will they get for Ayton if he's not back? So I think Denver is a pick that I could see happening that makes some sense to me.
Okay. Chris, do you want to leave or do you want to stick around?
I
got to
get rolling, guys.
Okay.
Rohan, who are your picks? And then I'll leave and I can feel better about leaving.
Honestly,
give me your picks now.
We're like going to wrap up the show in like a minute. So,
okay,
Rohan.
Wait.
Okay.
Give your pick.
Well, honestly, now I'm going to sound like I'm copying Chris, but I was genuinely actually also going to take Denver. But I'll add some masala on it.
If you pick my team, I'm going to be upset.
I'll add some masala on it, I'm going to stick with Denver, and they're going to trade Michael Porter Jr.
Oh.
Yeah.
Do you have anyone in mind that they're going
not
to?
Not yet. Okay. Not yet, but that's my... That's my twist on Herring. That's my remix, so it's not the exact same.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it, though. Because, I mean, I could see how they improve quickly by doing that. Like, I think that they need someone that's a little bit more well-rounded than him.
Yeah.
And that's who they would trade him for, clearly, if they did that. All right.
I think getting off that contract is going to be tough, but we talked about that.
Some small market team is going to be desperate, I think.
So my team, before we go... I have the Celtics in the East. I have the Los Angeles Clippers in the West.
Ooh.
And I think this team is going to... I'm going to watch basically every Clippers game next year.
Sleeping giant.
The Clippers.
I think they are going to run through the NBA next season.
Wow.
And they are so...
Wow.
They are stacked. Look at that roster. It is...
No, they are.
It is an ideal NBA roster.
The Norm Powell trade, sneaky brilliant. Sneaky, sneaky brilliant.
No, it's a great roster. I guess it would depend on what Michael means by run through, just because I think even the way they're set up, like they could end up being like a Golden State next year, I think, is a good way to put it. Like they could certainly win the whole thing. I don't think there's a such thing as them running through the league, though, just because I think they're going to – even if they're healthy, they're not going to be playing to win that many games. Like, in terms of, does that make sense as far as, like, they're going to sit guys to make sure they're good and to make
Kawhi
sure they're
healthy? Kawhi Leonard revenge tour. Let's go.
Over under.
Let's
with,
go.
With load management in between every game. And that's
over,
fine. And that's okay. Like, it's not, I'm making a joke, but it's also okay to like aim
over,
for the bigger picture. That's all I'm saying. Is like they're not going to win 65 games.
Over
and then
under
win the title
over
too.
Under
That's
55
all.
Games played in the regular season for Kawhi Leonard.
I'm taking the over, personally.
I'm taking the over, hopefully. I hope he plays more than 50. The league is so much more fun.
Yep.
Not even because he's, like, super entertaining and he's going on Steph Curry's sort of, like, scoring binges, but just, like, he's a great player.
Yeah,
he's
so
a great two-way player that gives a team a chance to win a title that otherwise really shouldn't have one. I know they had a chance even when he was out the postseason, you know, postseason ago, but we'll see. I hope it's over. I hope it's over.
Well, this was fun, guys. I know we had some other emails we didn't get to because Rohan just took it off the rails by ranking Steph Curry first in the top 100, and we just never recovered. So apologies to our listeners there. But thank you both. This was great. You guys are awesome. Your expertise, your insight, especially you, Rohan.
What is that supposed to mean? I didn't come up with the 6 plus 18, 24 take. I'm simply just telling you what I saw people
reheat
saying.
It.
He's just being the delivery man for it.
Yeah, it's like, why are you shooting the messenger, brother? Like,
There were a lot of
Kobe tributes throughout the series.
I made no Tim Donaghy, D-Wade 2006 jokes. I bit my tongue. My Lord, if Jason Tatum got those whistles, he'd still be at the free throw line right now. We'd still be playing game 6, but that's okay. It's not a big deal. No, seriously, thanks, guys. This was a lot of fun. Thank you so much to our listeners. Please keep your emails coming. We're obviously going to be keeping the pod going throughout the offseason. We got a lot of draft stuff. We got free agency stuff, so we need your questions. openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. Everybody stay safe. Everybody enjoy the NBA offseason.
At Kroger Pharmacy, Care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Medical Mutual wants to remind you it's almost time for Medicare's annual enrollment period. As a trusted health insurer for more than 90 years, Medical Mutual is here to help you find better Medicare benefits. Be confident you're getting the most from your Medicare Advantage plan. Schedule your free Medicare plan review today at medmutual.com/review. Medical Mutual, Ohio's hometown Medicare insurer.